They're trying to be a good friend of mine. I was a free man in Paris. I felt unfettered and alive. There was nobody calling me up for favors, and no one's future to decide. You know I go back there tomorrow, but for the work I've taken on, stoking the star maker machinery behind the popular song.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Thursday, everybody. Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network and all the other lovely stations that carry the show. Welcome aboard. So Donald Trump is in Paris. He's, I think, as we speak, having dinner with President Macron and the First Lady and Melania at the Eiffel Tower. You know, it's so funny how the vernacular has changed. You know, a press conference in the old days when we actually had a White House that was tolerant of the press, I'm not even talking about had a good working relationship with, because the Obama administration was not the most press-friendly administration, from what I'm told. The people at the Talk Media News Service used to tell me that the Bush administration worked much better with the press than the Obama administration did. But wow, compare them to what we have now, it's night and day. And so when the president goes to another country or has another foreign leader here, what they do is they do a joint appearance. They each make a statement, and then they do what's called a two and two. They take two questions from the American media and two from the media of whatever country is traveling here or he's traveled to. So today it would be two from the American press and two from the French press. Well, Trump didn't even do that. I'll tell you, he's got such disdain for the American media that his second question went to the French TV of China. I think he just pointed to someone who didn't look American for his second question because he didn't want another question like the first one he got, because this is the first one he got.
Mr. President, your FBI nominee said if someone in a campaign got an email about Russia like the one that your son Don Jr. received, that they should alert the FBI rather than accept that meeting. Is he wrong? Also, were you misled by your team in not knowing about this meeting? And Mr. President, thank you very much. You have heard President Trump say that it may
and this is
Russia.
The question for the French president
who interfered with the U.S. election. Is President Trump taking a hard enough line on Russia as you see it? Merci.
Well, I'll start off by saying, first of all, I believe that we will have a great FBI director. I think he's doing really well. And we're very proud of that choice. I think I've done a great service to the country.
Listen
by choosing him.
Him.
He,
what's his name, Donald?
Make us all proud.
Come on.
Someday we'll see that.
What's his name?
And hopefully someday soon. So we're very proud of him.
Him. Him. Donald Trump couldn't remember Christopher Wray's name. I am 100% certain of that. Again, I can't be 100% certain, but really, him. It sounded like he was searching for the name. He couldn't get it. And he just said him. He said him twice. Christopher Wray is his name. Who I'm a bit skeptical of, but, you know, nobody asked me and I don't get a vote. All right, back to his answer.
As far as my son is concerned, my son is a wonderful young man.
Yeah.
He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer, but a...
But she was represented in the email from Mr. Goldstone as a government lawyer. We don't really know much about who this woman is. But in the email, she was represented as a government lawyer. Okay, I'm going to... you know me. I'm going to keep interrupting him. I can't help it.
But a Russian lawyer.
Right.
It was a short meeting. It was a meeting that... went very, very quickly, very fast.
Yeah, you just
said
that.
In the room, I guess one of them left almost immediately.
No, like 7 to 10 minutes.
Not really focused on the meeting.
Okay, point being?
I do think this. I think from a practical standpoint, most people would have taken that meeting.
No, most people would not have taken that meeting. Most people would not have taken that meeting because the way the meeting was promoted was, let's see. It is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump, helped along by Aras and Amin. Let's see. It's they're in the meeting offered to provide the Trump campaign with some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father. It is part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Most people would not have taken that meeting. And I'll give you proof of that. And the new FBI director now even doubled down on the fact that he would not take that meeting. But keep digging the hole, Donald.
It's called opposition research.
No, it's not.
Research into your opponent.
Okay, so if it's opposition research, then it's something of value now that you're being offered by a foreign entity, whether government or just a foreign national. Either way, it's something of value.
I've had many people. I have only been in politics for 2 years. But I've had many people call up, oh, gee, we have information on this factor or this person. Or-
yeah, are they from a foreign antagonistic government? A foreign government? Doesn't matter if they're a friend or not. It depends who is offering, you moron.
Or, frankly, Hillary. That's very standard in politics. Politics is not the nicest business in the world, but it's very standard where
no, it's not.
You have information and you take the information. In the case of Don, he listened. I guess they talked about, as I see it, they talked about adoption and some things. Adoption wasn't even a part of the campaign. But nothing happened from the meeting. Zero happened from the meeting.
It doesn't matter. The fact that he wanted to take this meeting when he was told that there was something of value, call it opposition research if you want, something of value that was coming from part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump, and Donald's response, Jr.'s response was, I love it. Yeah. It doesn't matter if anything came of it or not. I heard a great analogy last night from Ted Lieu, Congressman Ted Lieu of Southern California, who said, all right, you get a phone call and someone says, hey, come on over here. I've got some cocaine. And you say, great, I love it. Let's meet. Ostensibly to get the cocaine. You show up and it's not cocaine after all. No, it's just a bag of sugar. It doesn't matter. You still coordinated with that person to buy cocaine. It doesn't matter if it wasn't cocaine in the end. That their whole line of reasoning is just upside down and backwards. It's opposite world. It doesn't matter. And the fact is they're getting away with this line of bullshit and people are buying it.
From the meeting, and honestly, I think the press made a very big deal over something.
Yeah, of course you
really
do.
A lot of people would do. Now,
a lot of people wouldn't do it.
That went to the meeting. I say that she was in the halls of Congress.
You know what? It doesn't matter about the lawyer who went to the meeting. When he says this is something most people would do, let's go back to the confirmation hearing for Mr. Ray, Christopher Ray, the guy who was going to be the FBI director, the FBI nominee, that guy. Well, Lindsey Graham. I need to pot down a little bit. Okay. So, sorry about that. So Lindsey Graham at the meeting asked Christopher Ray, would you take that meeting?
Should Donald Trump Jr. have taken that meeting?
Well, Senator, I'm hearing for the first time your description of it, so I'm not really in a position to speak to it. I gather that Special Counsel Mueller
would...
Well,
let me ask you this. If I got a call from somebody saying the Russian government wants to help Lindsey Graham get reelected, they've got dirt on Lindsey Graham's opponent, should I take that meeting?
Well, Senator, I would think you'd want to consult with some good legal advisors before you did that.
So the answer is, should I call the FBI?
I think it would be wise to let the FBI
know. You're going to be the director of the FBI, pal.
Pal?
So here's what I want you to tell every politician. If you get a call from somebody suggesting that a foreign government wants to help you by disparaging your opponent, tell us all to call the FBI.
To the members of this committee, any threat or effort to interfere with our elections from any nation state or any non-state actor is the kind of thing the FBI would want to know.
All right. So I'll take that we should call you, and that's a great answer.
So for Donald Trump to say, this is a meeting most people would have taken. No, most people would not have taken it. And there's Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump's nominee to be the new FBI director saying, no, you don't take the meeting. You call the FBI. Then, of course, now he tries to blame it on Loretta Lynch.
Congress also. Somebody said that her visa or her passport to come into the country was approved by Attorney General Lynch. Now, maybe that's wrong. I just heard that a little while ago, but it's a little surprising.
A visa or a passport is not approved by the Attorney General. I'm sorry. Passport, I guess it sort of goes through the passport office. A visa is not approved by the Attorney General. He is such a fucking moron. How did this man, come on, America, what the hell did you do? And we're stuck with him for another 3.5 years. Really? All right, let's let him finish this question.
I was surprised to hear that. So she was here because of Lynch.
No, she was here because of Lynch.
So, again,
oh my God.
I have a son who's a great young man. He's a fine person. He took a meeting with a lawyer from Russia. It lasted for a very short period.
So what?
And nothing came of the meeting.
So what?
And I think it's a meeting that most people in politics probably would have taken.
Okay, now I don't know. No, most people in politics would not have taken it. And we don't know that nothing came of that meeting. Because, all right, I'm going to play for you a couple of clips from, I'm sorry, but MSNBC. So yesterday afternoon, Chuck Todd laid out a really good timeline of what happened with these emails, with this meeting. And here's Donald Trump saying, nothing came of the meeting. If you believe that Donald Trump didn't know this meeting was happening, Donnie Little Jr. gets an email from their Russian connection. And yes, there's videos all over the interwebs of Trump dining and palling around with the father and son billionaires. The son is the pop star, or would-be pop star. The father is like the biggest builder. He's like the Donald Trump of Russia, but he's got Putin's ear, right? And so they're pitched on a meeting, saying, because of our government support for Mr. Trump, we have information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Trump, her dealings with Russia. So here, Chuck Todd lays out the timeline, and it's very telling.
In early June, after Russian hackers penetrated the DNC and John Podesta's email accounts, but before it was publicly known, Trump Jr. was offered a meeting with a Russian lawyer.
Okay.
He was told was part of a Russian government effort to back his father and, quote, incriminate Clinton.
Right.
A mere 4 hours after the date and time of that meeting was confirmed, Mr. Trump, as candidate, is teasing that he's got dirt on his opponent.
4 hours.
I am going to give a major speech on probably Monday of next week, and we're going to be discussing all of the things that have taken place with the Clintons. I think you're going to find it very informative and very, very interesting.
4 hours later.
So now we now know that it's 2 days after those comments that the Trump campaign ends up meeting with the Russian lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right after the meeting's apparent conclusion that Mr. Trump is tweeting, quote, "Where are Hillary Clinton's 30,000 emails that you deleted?" Unquote.
Interesting.
Just a few days later, the first batches of emails hacked from the DNC do begin to drop.
Even more interesting.
The floodgates open. At the July convention, there's that bizarre change to the top of the GOP platform, making it a bit more Russia-friendly on the issue of Ukraine. And then there's this.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
When the Trump campaign is at its lowest on the day of the Access Hollywood tape drop, they get WikiLeaks, which Trump uses with gusto in his way to victory. And then there's the U.S. intelligence assessment on that same very day, by the way, exposing Russia's effort, which then prompts a criminal investigation, which brings us back to today. Sources tell NBC News that the president was consulted on his son's initial statement about his meeting with that Russian lawyer. That statement has proven itself to be a brazen effort to at least mislead the public on what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
In short, Donald Trump Jr. emails and the subsequent 3 days to get the story straight may give special counsel Bob Mueller two major pieces of evidence. Evidence of a willingness to work with the Russians and evidence of a willingness to cover up the extent of that contact. And that, like this entire timeline, may now end up being crucial evidence.
As it should be.
The Trump team.
You know, look, I get the reasoning of all the people who say, come on, there's nothing there. There's a lot of smoke, but there's no fire. First of all, we don't know if there's any fire or not. It's not like we're seeing all the evidence that Robert Mueller has uncovered. There's an ongoing investigation that's probably going to go on for at least another year, if not longer. They don't tell us what they're finding. All we're getting are the little drip, drip, drips that come out from the media. So we're getting piecemeal evidence. This, I think, is huge. Now, they're telling us, you know, oh, it doesn't matter because nothing came of it. It doesn't matter if anything came of it. It was the intention. Again, I don't care if it was a bag of cocaine or sugar. You went there expecting the cocaine. And the fact that Trump, you know, within hours after this email first showed up, said, I'm going to have a major speech Monday and tell you all the things that Hillary was doing. He did a major speech on Monday, but it had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. Wonder why? Because it was a couple of days after that the WikiLeaks emails started leaking out. He probably knew they were coming. Maybe they were delayed by a few days. But wait, there's more. You know, I screwed up the other day when I was talking with Laffy because I thought the most juicy part of these junior emails were on page 4, which was actually the first page of the communication. But Chris Hayes last night had another, David Daladin, I think is the name of the NBC correspondent, who noted something reading through the rest of the emails, which to me originally were just like, you know, setting up the meeting. We're going to do it at 3:00. We're going to do it at 4:00. He noticed something that went right over my head at first, but listening to this makes you go, holy shit. Wow. So listen.
A careful reading of the email chain seems to suggest that Don Jr.
in fact, did have a conversation on the phone before the meeting with the person in Moscow offering the information, despite claiming he had no such contacts. Just the emails are between Don Jr. and his acquaintance, Rob Goldstone. And this is during the back and forth, setting up the logistics of the meeting. Now, Goldstone references his source. That's the pop singer, real estate developer, Emin Agalarov, right? At 12:40 p.m. on June 6th, Goldstone wrote, "Hi, Don. Let me know when you are free to talk with Emin by phone about this Hillary info you had mentioned earlier this week, so wanted to try to schedule time and day." That afternoon, 3:03, Don Jr. responds, "Rob, could we speak now? D." Goldstone responds, half hour later, "Let me track him down in Moscow. What number he could call?" 1 minute later, Don Jr., "Myself, thanks, D." 5 minutes after that, Goldstone, "Okay, he's on stage in Moscow, but should be off within 20 minutes, so I'm sure can call." And then nearly an hour passes, and Don Jr. writes, "Rob, thanks for the help."
Uh-huh.
So what happened during that hour?
Gee.
It appears that there was a phone call. Did the phone call between Don Jr. and Emin take place? That "thanks for the help" an hour after setting up a call suggests that it might have.
You think?
And then this exchange the next day, Goldstone writes, "Don, hope all is well. Emin asked that I schedule a meeting with you and the Russian government attorney who's flying over from Moscow this Thursday. I believe you are aware of the meeting. And so wondered if 3 p.m. or later on Thursday worked for you. I assume it would be at your office. I believe you are aware of the meeting." Again, that
Again.
Seems to be a reference to them having some form of communication already. Perhaps a phone call, making Don Jr., quote, aware of the meeting. What are they going to give you? What are they going to talk about? Later that day, Don Jr. mentions for the first time the other participants he plans to bring, writing, "Great, it will likely be Paul Manafort, campaign boss, my brother-in-law, and me."
You know, and so if he hadn't had the phone call and didn't know a little more of what was going to be said in this meeting, what they were going to find out about, why would he then say, "You know what, I'm going to bring along the campaign boss and Jared, who's in charge of everything, because Jared, he'll eat anything." You know, why else would he have brought them? And then a little later, when they're discussing what time it'll be, there's another email saying we have to move the meeting from 3 till 4 because the lawyer is going to be in court. That's another whole story. There was no question of let me check with Jared and Paul to make sure they're available. I thought they were so busy. You know, this was just a week or so after they clinched the nomination. He didn't have to check with them to make sure that they were going to have time to meet. Something is really, really fishy here. I don't buy for a second their denials that it was a nothing burger. Nothing happened. Maybe nothing happened. I think they got wind of the fact that the Russians hacked into the DNC or got John Podesta's emails or whatever they did, that they knew all this was coming down the pike, and this is when they found out. That's what I think. As for this attorney, I have no idea. I don't even know if she was the one who was in the meeting. I just know something is really fishy. And these are people who lie. They lie prodigiously. They lie expertly. They lie as if it's second nature to them, because it is. This is what they know how to do, and they do it so well. They lie. And now Donald Trump is in Paris representing the U.S. at Bastille Day. You know what? We've got Howie Klein coming up in a few minutes, but I've been sitting on this video since last week, since the G20. There is an Australian journalist who works for Australian Broadcasting Company. His name is Chris Ullman, and he did a bit of a commentary on Donald Trump that, you know, now more than ever, I have to play it. I mean, Donald Trump, before I get to that, let me play this. So President Macron takes a question from a French journalist who asks.
Well, you've mentioned a friend, Jim.
He made up
Jim.
We told
you that Paris is no longer Paris. You were implying at the time that Paris was not safe anymore. You've also said that France and Germany are infected by terrorism, and quote, "It's their fault because they let people enter their territory." Those are very strong words. Would you repeat them today?
Yeah.
And do you still believe
would
that France is not able to fight terrorism on its own territory.
Say it to my face, you fucker.
You better let me answer that one first. That's a beauty. He's the one that asked the question. That wasn't even one of my picks. You know what? It's going to be just fine because you have a great president.
Oh.
You have somebody that's going to run this country, right? And I would be willing to bet, because I think this is one of the great cities, one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Oh, he's such a kiss ass.
You have a great leader now. You have a great president. You have a tough president. He's not going to be easy on people that are breaking the laws and people that show this tremendous violence.
Oh, my God.
So I really have a feeling that
all the terrorism will stop.
Peaceful and beautiful Paris. And I'm coming back. You better do a good job, please. Otherwise, you're going to make me look very bad.
Because it's all about you,
and
dumb.
You're always welcome.
It was such a kiss-ass fest there. So here's the question. He made up this fake friend who said, Paris isn't Paris anymore. And, you know, the terrorists have run amok and you're not safe. And they're only here because they let people in. And the journalist says, say that, tell us that in person. And Dump, of course, backs up. Oh, I love the French. It's the most beautiful country. And the Paris is gorgeous. And because you've got such a great, strong leader now. Shut up. So now I want to bring to you the words of this Australian journalist, Chris Ullman, because, well, all journalists should be this open and honest.
He knew, Barry, that the President of the United States has a particular skill set, that he's identified an illness in Western democracies, but he has no cure for it and seems intent on exploiting it. And we've also learned that he has no desire and no capacity to lead the world. The G20 became the G19 as it ended. On the Paris Climate Accords, the US was left isolated and friendless. But given that that was always going to happen, a deft president would have found an issue around which he could rally most of the leaders. And he had the perfect one, North Korea's missile tests. So where was the G20 statement condemning North Korea, which would have put pressure on China and Russia? Other leaders expected it. They were prepared to back it, but it never came. There's a tendency among some hopeful souls to confuse the speeches written for Trump with the thoughts of the man himself. He did make some interesting scripted observations in Poland about defending the values of the West, and he's in a unique position. He's the one man who has the power to do something about it. But it's the unscripted Trump that's real, a man who barks out bile in 140 characters, who wastes his precious days as president at war with the West's institutions like the judiciary, independent government agencies, and the free press. He was an uneasy, lonely, awkward figure at this gathering, and you got the strong sense that some of the leaders are trying to find the best way to work around him. Donald Trump's a man who craves power because it burnishes his celebrity. To be constantly talking and talked about is all that really matters, and there is no value placed on the meaning of words, so what's said one day can be discarded the next. So what did we learn? We learned that Donald Trump has pressed fast forward on the decline of the United States as a global leader. He managed to isolate his nation, to confuse and alienate his allies, and to diminish America. He will cede that power to China and Russia, two authoritarian states that will forge a very different set of rules for the 21st century. Some will cheer the decline of America, but I think we'll miss it when it's gone. And that's the biggest threat to the values of the West, which he claims to hold so dear.
Howie Klein is coming up next.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Senate Republicans releasing their newest version of the Better Care Reconciliation Act, you know, their bill to repeal and replace Obamacare. Reports say meet the new bill, basically the same as the old bill.
NBC News reports that while the new version of the bill does have some changes from the old version they couldn't pass quite recently, the deep, drastic cuts to Medicaid in particular are still in there. And the new version of the bill is still likely to take millions and millions of Americans who have health insurance right now and make them not have health insurance of any kind.
A new CBO score and a vote are expected next week. I spent a few minutes discussing what's at stake with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Look, these guys are not going to give up. They are motivated by ideology, which says that government is terrible and that we want to break every public health program that we possibly can. After they're through with health care, trust me, they're going to go to Social Security. They're going to go to the Veterans Administration, go after the post office. That's what their ideology is, not to mention that the very richest people in this country love the idea that under this Republican health care plan, they can get hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks, as well as insurance companies getting tax breaks, et cetera, et cetera. So we are engaged in a real tough fight. The good news is the American people are beginning to catch on that when you throw 22 million Americans off of health insurance, when you defund Planned Parenthood, when you raise premiums for older workers, when you cut Medicaid by $800 billion, this is a disaster, an unprecedented attack on health care in America. Latest poll that I saw, Nicole, had 12% of the American people supporting this absurd proposal. Our job is to keep the fight going. And the American people have got to stay on the phones. They've got to go to rallies. They've got to go to town meetings. They have to make sure that their Republican legislators understand that they will not accept this horrific piece of legislation.
Right. And there are a number of tools out there. We've been talking about them here. TrumpCareToolkit.org is one. But the best thing to do is simply call your senators every
email
day.
Email your senator.
Email.
Let them know that you know what's going on. What Republicans hope here, as they often do, is that the American people don't know what's going on. You know, the media often engages in speculation and who wins and who loses, but they don't talk about what's in the bill. But the more that the American people understand what is in this terrible bill, they're saying, you're kidding me. You're not going to really throw 22 million people off of health insurance to give tax breaks to billionaires. That is what this bill is about. So let's keep the pressure up. So far, we have been able to push them back. There are a number of wavering senators. Some have one reason for opposition. Some have a different reason. But our job is to make sure they don't get the 50 votes they need to pass this. I was just watching Fox Television an hour ago. My staff had the television on, and I was being lambasted because Sanders says that people will die if this legislation goes. I made the statement a few weeks ago on television that, in fact, thousands of people will die.
Yep.
Because the obvious truth is, if you're struggling with cancer, if you're struggling with heart disease, if you're struggling with diabetes, if you're struggling with a life-threatening disease and you have no health insurance and you have no money, you tell me what happens to those people. And what study after study after study, it's not me. The Harvard School of Public Health estimates that if they threw 23 million people off of health insurance, up to 28,000 people a year
yeah,
would die.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. This is life and death stuff. This is a horrific piece of legislation, and we have got to defeat it. And by the way, the next thing we have got to do is, after we defeat this terrible bill, we have got to mobilize the American people from coast to coast in the fight for a Medicare for All single-payer program. The United States has got to join every other major country on earth and guarantee health care to all people as a right.
If it fails next week, Mitch McConnell has made some threats about, oh, maybe having to work with Democrats. Is there the possibility of working together to, first of all, shore up the markets, to fix the markets so that there is insurance available in places where it's hard to get now, and maybe to finally get that public option in so someone like me, who's 57 years old, could buy into Medicare?
The answer is in the first point that you raised, shoring up, doing what we call cost sharing here, the answer
yes.
is, I think, yes. What rational people would do, Nicole, is to acknowledge that the Affordable Care Act is far from perfect. Deductibles are too high, copayments are too high, premiums are too high, and prescription drug costs are way too high. So the question is, how can we rationally and intelligently deal with those problems? And one of the answers is just what you proposed, is to make sure that every American in every state in this country has the choice of a public option if he or she is not satisfied with the private insurance that's out there. That is one of the solutions that I think we should be offering, something that I support.
Hear the whole interview at NicoleSandler.com. The president sat for an interview with Pat Robertson on Wednesday and said he'll be very angry if Republicans can't get this done.
It has to get passed. They have to do it. They have to get together and get it done.
What will happen if they don't?
Well, I don't even want to talk about it because I think it would be very bad. I will be very angry about it, and a lot of people will be very upset.
And that's a look at What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. The Nicole Sandler Show and What's News are 100% listener supported. So if you appreciate what we do, I hope you'll consider a contribution. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein. Uh-oh, Howie Klein? Tell me we don't have Howie Klein. We're going to have to try to call him back. I hate it when that happens because, you know, I work without a producer. So I bring him up and I see when the phone is answered, but it probably went to voicemail. I hope he's there. And we don't have an issue again like we did a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago. Come on, Howie Klein. Don't know where Howie Klein is. Huh. Well, that kind of sucks. Okay. And that's not good because, you know what? That was my, That came through the computer, too. It didn't even come through the board. I think I'm having phone problems, and I don't know why. What can I play for you? I'll tell you what. We already did What's News. I'm going to play the Green News Report and try to figure out what's going on with Howie Klein, and we'll be right back. Oh, it's live radio, everyone. Sorry about that. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Listen to Brad and Desi.
It's Thursday, July 13, 2017.
Ice shelves there and elsewhere around Antarctica are really kind of the canaries in the coal mine.
Iceberg the size of Delaware finally breaks off of Antarctica.
The system will be 3 times more powerful than any system on Earth.
Tesla will build the world's biggest battery in 100 days, or it's free. Trump's EPA moves to revive the controversial Pebble Mine in Alaska. Plus, France moves to phase out coal and the internal combustion engine.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Ever since the last ice age ended about 40,000 years ago, we've been warming ever since then. So we're continuing, and the Earth goes through these cycles where we cool and we warm, and that's what we are right now. We're on a warming trend.
Hey, James Quinones, weatherman from KPNX in Phoenix. Why don't you learn what the hell you're talking about before you go on the air and misinform Phoenix? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Phoenix just went through one of their worst heat waves ever, and you've got weathermen either not explaining what's going on to the people of Phoenix or just lying to them like James Quinones. Sorry, it makes me really angry.
Yeah, I can tell.
I'm not even a weatherman, but I try to learn what the hell I'm talking about before I say it. Anyway, what do you have for us today in the Green News Report?
Well, one of the
don't screw it up.
Well, one of the largest icebergs ever recorded just broke free from Antarctica. According to British scientists and NASA satellite images, the much-watched, fast-growing crack across the massive Larsen C ice shelf finally broke off sometime between Monday and Wednesday, calving an iceberg the size of Delaware, more than 600 feet deep, containing enough ice to cover all 50 states in more than 4 inches of ice. It's so big that maps of Antarctica will have to be revised. It won't raise sea levels by itself because the ice shelf was already sitting in the water, but its loss will likely accelerate the slide of land ice behind it into the sea. It's a further sign that Antarctica's ice sheets are destabilizing.
Now, there is some controversy about whether this would have happened with or without global warming. Is there anything definitive yet either way?
As of now, there's no consensus. There's disagreement among scientists, but it is consistent with what they've predicted.
So when there's no facts to support something, we don't claim there is. At the same time, when there are facts to support something, we don't lie about it to the public. James Quinones, weatherman of KPNX in Phoenix.
Meanwhile, the Environmental Protection Agency is taking a first step in reviving the controversial proposed Pebble Mine in Alaska's Bristol Bay watershed. That's despite overwhelming opposition from residents, tribes, environmental groups, and the commercial fishing industry, and despite being rejected by the Obama administration on the grounds that the mine's toxic waste would harm the world's largest salmon fishery. The EPA has opened up a new public comment period for folks to weigh in on whether they think that mine should go forward.
Well, poisoning the food supply is one thing. Making money is another. Keep your priorities straight, Ms. Doyen.
In Australia, Tesla CEO Elon Musk is making good on his offer to build the world's biggest battery for the province of South Australia.
Cool.
South Australia suffered massive blackouts earlier this year after a tropical storm downed power lines, and Australia's conservative leadership falsely blamed that on renewable energy. Musk has now signed a contract to build a $50 million battery system in 100 days or it's free. In a press conference, Musk said he made the bet to prove the concept.
And to prove that the people who were blaming renewable energy were wrong.
There was really this opportunity to make a significant statement about renewable energy to the world to show that you can really do a heavy-duty, large-scale utility-level battery system.
In China, a rural province served as a real-world testing ground to prove that it is possible to switch to 100% renewable energy on a regional scale. For a full week in mid-June, 6 million people in a rural region in northwest China used only renewable energy, hydroelectric, wind, and solar power for all of their electricity needs. It was an amount equivalent to burning more than 500,000 tons of coal. The test reportedly came off without a hitch, with no grid reliability issues, and without all the pollution. Finally, France has announced it will phase out all internal combustion engines by 2040. It's part of a new series of energy measures unveiled by French President Emmanuel Macron to make his country carbon neutral by 2050. France will also stop granting licenses for new oil and gas exploration and will phase out coal for generating electricity by 2022.
Wow, the rest of the world is doing some fascinating things when it comes to renewable energy.
Yes, they are.
Thank you very much. For more on all of these stories and the many that we didn't have time for, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Phoenix from the place we will rise together.
Now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Well, I don't know what happened to Howie Klein. This happened only once before when I tried calling him and there was an emergency with one of his neighbors and the ambulance had to be called and everything, and it was Howie to the rescue. I'm hoping he's okay. Left messages, so we'll see. But that means you and I have some time together. You know what happened today, don't you? Mitch McConnell unveiled his new TrumpCare 3.0.
After extensive consultations across the conference, numerous meetings with constituents, and intensive conversations with members, our conference has updated last month's Better Care discussion draft with additional provisions to make it stronger. We just walked through that revised draft together.
What?
It's now available online. I encourage everyone to review it.
Really? Where?
As before, it aims to stabilize and reform the collapsing insurance markets that have left too many with no options And it aims to make insurance more affordable and more flexible, so it's something Americans actually want to buy. For those stuck with Obamacare insurance they don't want or can't afford, we don't think they should be forced to buy it any longer. For those who buy insurance on an exchange and want to continue doing so, we want them to have lower premiums and more choices. For those tired of healthcare decisions being outsourced to far-off bureaucrats, we want to transfer many of those decisions back to them and to their doctors. We also want to strengthen Medicaid for those who need it most by giving states more flexibility ensuring that those program don't have the rug pulled out from under them. Many states want the ability to reform and improve their Medicaid program so that they can actually deliver better care at a lower cost. And we'd like to dramatically expand their authority to do that. It's an idea that could significantly improve health care in states all across our country. The draft we just discussed, like the one before it, addresses all of these objectives. It would again give Americans more tools for managing their own care, and this time go even further.
You know, the doublespeak is mind-blowing. They don't want to strengthen Medicaid. They want to phase it out over a few years. They want to cut it to the bones and kick millions of people off of the Medicaid rolls. They want to everything he said. It's all opposite world. So here's the deal. In the draft they released today, and you notice he said it's online. You can read it, but he doesn't tell you where. I have no idea where. If you want to read it, I'm sure you can find it. In the draft they put out, and they're still waiting on the CBO score, they did include the Ted Cruz amendment. And the Ted Cruz amendment would allow you to once again buy junk insurance. Remember before the Affordable Care Act, one of the arguments from the dumb fucks who were screaming, I had insurance, it only costed me $50 a month, and now I have to pay $300 a month. Yeah, but with the $300 a month, you're actually covered. What Ted Cruz is proposing is to let the insurance companies once again sell policies that don't cover anything. So people with those $50 a month policies would get sick. They'd go to the doctor and they'd find out the doctor visit's not covered. The medication is not covered. The tests are not covered. The labs are not covered. Nothing is covered. Oh, and then you have to go to the hospital. Well, the hospital's not covered. So this proposal would allow them to sell these junk policies again, as long as one of the policies that they offer somewhere in their portfolio covers the essential health services like hospitalization, like mental health care, like pharmaceuticals, like labs. I mean, things that we need, like maternity, because I may not need maternity, but, you know, most other women at some point will. Men think that you don't need maternity. Well, men, I hate to break it to you. There's no baby being made without you. So, yeah, you need maternity, too. They didn't change much about this. And no, I haven't read the whole thing. Let me read to you a little bit from the Washington Post. They write, the Senate GOP's push to rewrite the Affordable Care Act suffered an ill-timed setback Thursday as two centrist Republicans announced plans to offer their own health care plan just as leaders released an updated bill of their own. I'll tell you about that in a second. But, you know, I talk so much about how this will affect me. If they are able to overturn the Affordable Care Act, this is how I do the show, through my own lens. That's my life experience. This is how I speak. So I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of being diagnosed with lung cancer. It scares the living shit out of me that, you know, they could easily do this. And the tests that I need going forward, I will be unable to get because with a number of pre-existing conditions and as a cancer survivor and being 57 years old, I've got a triple whammy against me and I'll be unable to get insurance, certainly unable to afford, you know, to go to a doctor and get one CAT scan, let alone one every 4 months. So I want to know from you, how will this affect you? If you would care to weigh in, 954-889-6410 is the number, 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler, all one word. If I pick up, you'll be live on the air, because that's how we do it over here. So anyway, the two so-called moderate or centrist Republicans are Bill Cassidy of Louisiana and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. They went on CNN this morning and basically gave their own proposal of what they want to do. So they're not down with this McConnell plan. What they said is they would take the billions of dollars the federal government now receives in taxes under the Affordable Care Act and direct that revenue to the states so that the states could do it. Graham said, we're going to see which one can get 50 votes, he said. We're not undercutting him. He's not undercutting us. Our problem, this is Cassidy, he said, our problem has been trying to combine tax reform with replacement of Obamacare. We're giving the money back to the states. The states can do what they want to do. A blue state can do a blue thing. A red state can do a red thing. Can I just tell you, though, there is no such thing as a blue state or a red state. I live in Florida. Technically, I guess it's a red state, but there are plenty of us so-called blue people here. That's such a bullshit thing to say. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Who is this from the 623 area code?
Hi, it's Bill from Sun City.
Hey, Bill from Sun City. So what's on your mind? How would this affect you if this health care or wealth care bill goes through?
Oh, I'm a disaster, Nicole. I've recently had a heart attack.
Oh, no.
And a AAA operation to save my life. I had a massive heart attack 16 years ago.
Wow.
I'm on Medicare.
Well, then you're pretty safe for the moment. Now, don't think you're safe for the long term, because they want to gut Medicare too. But first things first, this is the first time in my life I've ever wished I was 65. But I've got, you know, well, I've got 7 years to go.
In 2 years, I am 65.
Oh, but you're on Medicare early because of a disability?
I was disabled at 47. I had a heart attack that I shouldn't have survived.
Wow.
And a stroke.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, I survived 16 years. You know what it is? It's Republican presidents. George Bush was elected. I had that episode. Donald Trump was elected. I had congestive heart failure.
Oh, God.
That almost killed me. But the good news was when they were looking at my heart, they saw the head of a monster. That monster was an aortic aneurysm that was swollen to the bursting, for which I received wonderful treatment. You know, that's the weird thing, Nicole. The treatment that I received, everybody should receive.
That's right.
And the thing that I don't get is this. They say we want free things.
It's not free.
I don't want free things.
Yeah.
They say we want free education. They say we want free health care. But you know something? When everybody gets it, it's not free anymore.
Well, and you pay for it in your taxes. That's the thing. You're going to pay one way or the other. If you pay through your taxes, then everyone has access to it.
Bigger than that. It's not free anymore because it's shared.
Mm-hmm.
Did everybody forget the lesson they taught us in kindergarten? I mean, really. Let's exercise our empathy muscles, America. And do the right thing. It's just too ridiculous.
I hear you.
God bless you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. 954-889-6410 or Skype to Nicole Sandler. You know, CNN, they do these focus groups with a group of Trump supporters. My God, America is just a nation of dumb fucks. That's the only way I can put it. Listen to these people. These people all voted for Trump. And in the segment before this, they were going back and forth on the whole, you know, Russia thing. And some think it's a fraud. Some think it's real. Something, you know, Junior's email really blew the lid off of it. But then Allison Camerota asks them about Trump care.
How are you feeling about President Trump's take on the health care bill?
Scared.
Why?
I have bipolar disorder, It's a pretty severe case. And I rely on my doctor and many medications to make me stable and able to function in the community. And if he takes that away, Medicaid people, Medicare people, those who are bipolar, no medications, no doctors, it's going to be like the zombie apocalypse. Really, running through the streets crazy.
What did you think he was going to do with
something
healthcare?
Better? And what I've seen come off the block is not better. It's scary to me.
What do you think, Jackie?
When Trump said, I'm going to repeal and replace Obamacare, I just kind of thought he's promising something that only Congress can do.
So you didn't take it that seriously.
I mean, I didn't. And he promised he was going to replace it with something better. And I just figured Congress isn't going to go along with him. So he's just saying something people want to hear.
But it seems that Congress is attempting.
Yeah, they are.
I know, right? I was wrong.
And now are you happy with his efforts on it and where Congress finds itself?
No. I mean, I have loved ones that have chronic conditions that are functioning now because of the medications they're on and because of the medical care they receive through, because I have health insurance. So no, I don't, I'm scared.
Gene, is there anything that scares you about the health care fight?
No, I mean, you know, like you said, he made the promise to repeal and replace. Right now it's in the Senate's hands. This is the problem. We got some Republicans that are not working with the president. You know, if I can use the term, you're fired, I would love to fire Paul Ryan, Senator McCain.
This guy's still defending
Trump. Sticking together. No one is working together for this.
Well, because the Democrats don't want to repeal.
No, they don't, because they
want to
keep.
They want to fix it.
Well, I mean,
they want
I
to fix
Obamacare.
It.
And does it work for you?
No. Well, I mean, it does, but my premiums went from $350 to $900 a
month. And that's a problem.
Is that right? Yeah. And so you would support it being repealed right now?
Absolutely.
He wouldn't, because then he'll be without insurance. What he needs is for them to get together and fix the thing. Angus King spoke out about it this morning.
This is an absolutely preposterous process. I mean, a bill drafted in secret by we literally don't know who. We're going to see it maybe this afternoon. They're talking about a vote on Tuesday. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous to be making laws that are affecting 1/6 the U.S. economy and tens and maybe perhaps 100 million people that nobody knows what's in it. Take, for example, the insurance provision that you just mentioned. My first read, and in hearing from insurance people, is that would essentially destroy the individual market, because only younger and healthier people would buy these bare bones policies. It would take them out of the risk pool. That would leave older and sicker people in the individual market. That would drive the costs up, which would drive more people out, which would drive the costs up further. It's a death spiral. And that's the kind of thing we ought to have hearings on. We ought to have people in from the insurance industry, people from the medical industry, people from hospitals across the country, and understand what this will do before people vote on it. If I were on the other side, I wouldn't vote on it until I got more information from the people that will be affected by it. Otherwise, you're asking your people to jump off a cliff and not know what's at the bottom.
Yeah, well, we know what's at the bottom. Sure death. Here's the few things that they did. They made a few changes to appease the so-called moderates. They included a $45 billion fund to help people with opioid addiction. Not enough. An extension of 3 Affordable Care Act taxes. There's a 3.8% tax on investments on the wealthy, a 0.9% surtax on Medicaid for the wealthy, and a tax on insurance executives' compensation. Okay. And then there's $70 billion that goes to states to help stabilize the cost of health care. This is important. And implement new reforms, bringing the total in this fund to 182. I'm hoping what that $70 billion is to stabilize the cost sharing reductions, which the government now is saying they're not going to pay. That's why there's instability in the markets. That's why the insurance companies are pulling out of the different, healthcare markets in the states, because they, first of all, there's uncertainty. They don't know how long it's going to be around. Second of all, the government is not guaranteeing that they'll pay what they said they'll pay. It's like the debt ceiling, which is going to come up again probably in the next few weeks. They didn't do much to appease the moderates, and apparently Susan Collins is still saying this is a no-go for her. Remember, they can only lose 2 votes. Dean Heller in Nevada, people make phone calls to him because He's on the fence here. Rob Portman in Ohio is on the fence. You still got to make those phone calls. Like Bernie Sanders said, call them, email them, speak out. This is what they did to appease the conservatives. Health savings accounts, which are the biggest scam ever. They're accrued from pre-tax dollars that can be used to pay for health insurance premiums. But if you can't afford your premiums in the first place, who's got an extra $5,000 a year to throw into a tax-free account to pay the premiums with? Seriously. Then this, catastrophic health plans would be offered and people could be eligible for tax credits to help pay for them. Those are the junk plans. Or if you're young, you know what? If you're young, you could probably get away with a catastrophic health plan saying that if you get cancer or something, then, you know, you'll be covered. Although, again, without the guarantees that are in the Affordable Care Act, you don't know that they will cover things. They're talking about them as catastrophic plans, but unless there are some regulations there that say hospitalization will be covered, cancer will be covered, labs radiology and, you know, really spelling out what's going to be covered without the protections of the Affordable Care Act, you won't have them. You know, we talk about the Affordable Care Act quite a bit. What we forget to say is the entire name of the bill. It was the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And I guess PPACA was too cumbersome, but that's what it is, or that's what it was, or still is, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Yeah, it didn't live up to the affordable part of it. That's where it needs to be fixed. But the patient protection part, that did live up to it. It did protect us, and it continues to protect us. There was one more. Hold on, one more thing. A health plan. Oh, this is the junk plan one. A health plan with narrow coverage but cheaper premiums would be offered for people in the individual market. Those are the junk plans. That, yeah, you might feel better saying, I have health insurance. I pay $50 a month for it. It won't cover anything. They want to send us back to the way it was before we had insurance that worked. I get that the Affordable Care Act doesn't work for everybody, but I know a lot of people it worked for. I can name right off the top of my head quite a few of us who are either cancer survivors or are still going through it, who are only alive right now because of the Affordable Care Act. I'm one of them. I've got friends going through treatment now. The only reason is because of the Affordable Care Act. If this bill goes through, we're all sitting ducks. So go to TrumpCareToolkit.org, make some phone calls, send some emails, call your senators. It is a matter of life and death. Tomorrow, our old friend of the show, Harvey J.K., will return. He's got a lot on his mind. It's been a while since he's been here. So thank you for listening. I'll reach out to Howie and hope he's okay. And we'll meet again tomorrow to wrap up the week. Thanks again, everyone.